journey through the Gospel of Mark. However, we're now ready to return back to Mark. And in preparation for the coming weeks, where we will turn our attention to the Lord's resurrection. Well, this morning I want us to draw our attention to what I believe is the ultimate Passover of all. It's now evening time, when the Lord will have his last meal with his disciples, with the apostles. This, in essence, was the most important meal in the Jewish calendar. Yet, my pen here. It occurred, a lot of writing there. It occurred on the 15th day of Nisan. Preparation would begin on the 14th day of Nisan. It's during those afternoon hours of the 14th day of the month of Nisan, which corresponds to our early April, or maybe late March. Late March, early April. I maintain that it was about April the 6th, if we can date it wise, when this occurs. When the lambs are killed for the Passover meal. Now, what happens to these lambs first, before they are killed, is they're brought to the temple, where they're killed, and their blood is put upon the altar. Then, after that is done, the family member, the male family member, generally it's the patriarch, he would bring that lamb back, and they would roast the lamb that afternoon. They would roast the lamb. For the evening of the 15th day, which would begin and began at sunset, or we might call it sundown, but at sunset, that would begin the 15th day, and all this is in preparation on the 14th day of Nisan. Now, if you want to look at the exact details of it, you go back to the Old Testament and turn to Exodus chapter 12. And it lays that out. This is why it was the most important meal in the Jewish calendar. So it's turned to Exodus chapter 12, and as I said, it lays all that out for us. That is when you have the Feast of Unleavened Bread, and the Passover lamb is laid out in the beginning of Exodus 12 there. Well, with that in mind, I want us to look at our text this morning. Now, you're going to find parallel passages for this. We're going to look at our text in Mark chapter 14, verses 12 through 31. We'll take it section by section, or what I say like verse by verse. Parallel passages for this are found in Luke chapter 22, and in Matthew chapter 26, and in John 13. But John doesn't really deal with the Lord's Supper as such. With the Passover meal and what occurs, whereas Matthew, Mark, and Luke do. So first, what we read here in the text is preparation for the meal. Look at what we read here in verses 12 through 16 of Mark 14. On the first day of unleavened bread, that's the 14th day in the month of Nisan. When the Passover lamb was being sacrificed, his disciples said to him, that's the 12, his disciples said to him, "Where do you want us to go and prepare for you to eat the Passover?" Now, in Jesus' day, in the first century, where the Passover lambs and where they were sacrificed and stuff was in Jerusalem. It was paramount that they would eat the Passover meal in the city of Jerusalem. And so that's why his disciples asked them, "Where do you want us to go and prepare for you to eat the Passover?" They weren't leaving it up to Jesus to prepare the Passover. They wanted to do it. So, and this is what he says. "And he sent two of his disciples and said to them," now notice, it doesn't tell us who those two disciples were, but one of them, I can guarantee you it wasn't, was Judas. He doesn't say who the two were, but it definitely was not Judas Iscariot. "And he sent two of his disciples and said to them, 'You go into the city, and a man will meet you carrying a pitcher of water. Follow him. And wherever he enters, say to the owner of the house, the teacher, the rabbi, the teacher says, where is my guest room in which I may eat the Passover with my disciples?' And he himself will show you a large upper room, furnished and ready. Prepare for us there." So what we notice here is Jesus sends two disciples to make arrangements for them to eat the Passover meal. We might ask ourselves, well, why did Jesus do it this way? Well, if we turn back to the Gospel of John, John chapter 11, we'll understand the reason why he did this. Why did he do it this way? Why not say, "Hey guys, we're going to have the Passover meal here. Just follow me, and I'll show you where it's at. And this is where we're going to do it." But he doesn't do that. He sends two of his disciples to make the preparations. But Jesus tells them that when you get there, you're going to find it's already furnished. Everything is already ready. But they still have some preparations to go. But in John chapter 11, we see why he did this. Beginning with verse 55, or 54, and following. "Therefore, Jesus no longer continued to walk publicly among the Jews," because what we read in verse 53, "so from that day on they planned together to kill him. Therefore, Jesus no longer continued to walk publicly among the Jews, but went away from there to the country near the wilderness and to a city called Ephraim. And there he stayed with the disciples." Now the Passover of the Jews was near. "And many went up to Jerusalem out of the country before the Passover to purify themselves." So they were seeking for Jesus. Who was seeking for Jesus? Why, the religious leaders. The scribes and the Pharisees. And we're saying to one another as they stood in the temple, "What do you think? That he will not come to the feast at all?" Now the chief priests and the Pharisees were given orders that if anyone knew where he was to report it, so that they might seize him. So why does Jesus say what he does? Jesus does not want anyone to know but his disciples where they are going to eat Passover. So he sends two of them. But the reason why he sends two and it's not Judas, the Lord knows who's going to betray him. The Lord knows that he doesn't want to be seized while they're eating a Passover meal, because he's got some very important things to do during that Passover meal. And he doesn't want any interruptions. But he knew that Judas Iscariot was going to betray him. He knew that. But he didn't want Judas to know where they were going, because what would Judas do? Hey, he would go running right to one of those chief priests or Pharisees and scribes and tell them, hey, guys, we're going to be eating the Passover meal here. You want to get Jesus? He'll just be with us. You can get him then. So Jesus didn't do that. He sent two disciples. And the other interesting thing we see here is those two disciples follow his instructions. It is as he said it would be. But notice what he says here. You go into Jerusalem. You go into the city, and a man will meet you carrying a pitcher of water. You follow him. Now, here's the interesting thing. Jesus probably, more than likely, talked to this man. Why do I say this? Because it was very unusual. A man, during Jesus' day, he would not be carrying a pitcher of water. The woman would be carrying a pitcher of water. So that's a very unusual thing. What he is telling his disciples is, you're going to see a man carrying a pitcher of water, and you follow him. And that was very unusual, to see a man carrying the pitcher of water, and they would see that man carrying a pitcher of water, and you follow him. And he's going to show you where we're going to eat the Passover meal. And he says, wherever he enters, you say the owner of the house, the teacher says, wherever that guy goes, wherever he enters into, you say to the owner of the house, the teacher says, where is my guest room? Where is my place? Where are my disciples? And I may eat the Passover. And he will show you a large upper room, furnished and ready. Prepare for us there. So in verse 16, we read, so the disciples went out, those two disciples, the disciples went out and came to the city and found just as he had told them, and they prepared the Passover. They get everything ready. Now, this is not just a normal meal of getting things ready. They follow his instructions. But see what we need to learn and discover is what this involved. Originally, when they ate the Passover meal, and they don't do it that way anymore, the Jews don't really do that, do celebrate Passover, which they still do. But in Jesus' day, by the time of Jesus' day, they didn't do it how they would do it originally. Originally, they ate the Passover meal standing up, not sitting. But by this time, the meal had become more of a formal thing. So if you go back to Exodus again, you will see that. And the reason why they would eat it standing up. Specifically in Exodus chapter 6. You will find that. But here's what they do. They take their place. When they eat the Passover, they take their place, and this is what they are preparing. The table is already there, but it is U-shaped. So what the disciples do is they place cushions around that table. They place the cushions around that table in preparation for the Passover. And that U-shaped table was only about, it was only about 6 to 8 inches off the floor. So not a, you know, it wasn't a tall table, wasn't a long table, it wasn't like a kitchen table or a dining room table. It was a table that was placed in the center of this U-shape. And around this U-shape is where they would recline. They would then, around that U-shaped table, they would then lay, this is why the cushions were placed, they would then lay on their elbows, on their left elbows, on those cushions, around the perimeter of the table. Notice, it is not like what you see in painting. It is not like Leonardo da Vinci's depiction of the Lord's Last Supper, when you have this long table and the Lord's in the center. It wasn't like that at all. They didn't sit in chairs. They reclined on these cushions, and they leaned on their left elbows on that cushion, so they could eat with their right hand. They didn't have or eat like we do today. They ate with their hands, with their fingers. And they're leaning against one another. And Jesus is sitting in the center. He has the place of honor. And to his right, the chief seat. Now, Mark doesn't tell us anything about this, but when you read Matthew and Luke, you find out that the disciples once again are arguing about who is the greatest. In other words, they're arguing about who's going to take the best seat by Jesus. That would be on his right-hand side. The other one would be on the left side. So on the right-hand side, see, and when they start doing that, when we read in John, the Gospel of John, that's when Jesus begins to wash the disciples' feet. Something they weren't even thinking about. They were thinking about, where are we going to sit? Who's going to sit where? And what happens is the Lord places them. And where they sit is Judas Iscariot, the one who's going to betray him, is sitting on his right, the place of honor by the teacher. John is sitting on his left. Peter's in one of the most sitting is reclining in one of the most least of the cushions. That's why he could look over at John and say, who does he mean? And that's what John asked the Lord, as we see. Now, as far as the meal itself is concerned, the lamb would be roasted along with bitter herbs, horseradish, bay, thyme, I think that's how you pronounce it. Thyme, I think it's thyme. Marjoram, and basil, all those together would make a dipping sauce for the lamb called haraset. The entire lamb would be eaten. And what would happen is, there was not just one cup there were four cups of wine. Not one, but four. And those four cups of wine would be passed around, that table would be passed around the guys. Each one was punctuated. Each cup of wine was punctuated by the singing, of the Hallel. The Hallel consisted of Psalms 113 through 118. So when each cup was passed, as they're partaking of the cup, they would sing part of the Hallel. And you look at Psalm 113 through 118, you see how long those are. But that's what they would sing. Each one was punctuated by that. After the second cup had been passed, this is what would normally happen in the family. The youngest son would ask the question after the second cup of wine was passed. The youngest son would ask this question. He was instructed to ask the meaning of the observance of the Passover. Why do we do this? Then the patriarch of the family would then explain the story of God's deliverance of his people from Egypt. That would be after the second cup is passed. Now this meal usually began, as I said, usually began at sunset, and it would last until midnight. So we're not talking about a hurried meal here. There's a lot going on here. Now we're going to see the significance of this for Jesus later on in our text. Because what did Jesus do now? He speaks of his betrayal. Verses 17 through 21. When it was evening, he came with the 12. As they were reclining at the table and eating, Jesus said, "Truly, I say to you that one of you will betray me." Now remember, they're leaning, they're reclining against one another. And Jesus is looking around at them. And he says to them, "Truly I say to you that one of you will betray me, one who is eating with me." They began to be grieved and to say to him one by one, "Surely not I, Lord. Surely not I." And he said to them, "It is one of the 12. It is one of you. One who dips with me in the bowl. For the Son of Man is to go just as it is written of him. But woe to that man by whom the Son of Man is betrayed. It would have been good for that man if he had not been born." Now he has said this after that second cup. Now this is the last time he will do so, because soon it's going to happen. Can you imagine what the apostles must have thought? This Passover meal is supposed to be a feast. They call it the Feast of the Unleavened Bread. It's supposed to be a celebration of what Yahweh had done for his people in delivering them from Egypt. And all of a sudden the Lord shatters that by saying, "One of you." And you can imagine him looking around at the 12, around that U-shaped table. "One of you," and he doesn't point or anything, but you can imagine him bearing his eyes on them saying, "One of you will betray me." And as Matthew and Luke tells us, before the night is over, one of you will betray me. And they begin to say, surely not I. Now, it's interesting what Matthew, and I think specifically Luke, brings out. All of them say, except for Judas Iscariot, all of them say, surely not I, Lord. Judas Iscariot never uses the term Lord for Jesus. He says, Rabbi, teacher. That's very significant. You notice that Judas Iscariot does not call him Lord, but Rabbi, teacher. And what we notice in this, they're all grieved. Even Judas Iscariot showed his grieving. Now, what that word means in the Greek is this. It means they were pained. It means they were insulted. They were offended. It's like the Lord Jesus is telling them, one of you, one of the 12, you're going to betray me. One of us? One of your apostles? They couldn't accept that. They couldn't believe that. And even Judas puts a word in, as we see. Why does he do that? Why, of course, he wants to be included among the 12. In that, not, surely not I. He doesn't want to be discovered. But do not kid yourselves, brothers and sisters. Jesus knows that it's him. And I do believe that Judas knew that Jesus knows that it's him. And sure enough, that is discovered when he dips the bread in the sauce at the same time the Lord does. But we also notice it is because Judas is reclining next to the Lord, and you can probably imagine him whispering to the Lord, it's not I, Rabbi, is it? And we know in one of the other Gospels that what Jesus says, it is as you said. So he knew. And it was at that moment, at that time, that Jesus says, do what you do, do it quickly. And immediately Judas leaves when Jesus says that, when he has dipped. Why the significance? Because, brothers and sisters, this was a violation of what we call table fellowship. Of what is known was known to the Jews and others as table fellowship. That's why the religious leaders castigated Jesus for eating with tax collectors and sinners. Because what Jesus was doing by doing that, Jesus was identifying with them. Jesus was making common fellowship with them. He was saying that I'm one of you by doing that. And that's why the religious leaders did not like that. But remember, he said he came to call the sinners. And remember what the religious leaders said. And he said, you have said, you are. But your sin remains with you, because they didn't want to do anything about it. But that's what this table fellowship is all about. It meant he was identifying with them. And that is what Jesus is talking about here. The one who does this breaks that table fellowship with me. Woe to him. There's a Celtic tradition of hospitality that's even given to strangers. Well, a family and the people you know as well, but there's a Celtic tradition among the Irish and the Scots, but specifically, and the Welsh, the Celts, that even if a stranger comes, you offer them hospitality. You let them sit down and you offer them a meal. It's like, and that was table fellowship. Even to strangers. But sometimes that had dire consequences. If any of you have ever read anything about the Jacobite times of King James and then William coming in, there was a time there, I remember and hearing this growing up, in Scottish history. It's called the Massacre at Glencoe, or we would say Glencoe. That is when the MacDonald clan, invited, because of this, the royal regiment of soldiers, which was headed up by a Campbell, a Scot, Robert Campbell. They invited him because what they said is they had nowhere to bivouac. They had nowhere to shelter. Now, this happened on February the 13th, 1692. They had nowhere to shelter. And so the MacDonald clan said, well, we'll give you shelter. And the MacDonalds invited these soldiers. This was at night now, in wintertime. They invited these soldiers to have table fellowship with them, to have a meal with them, to stay with them over the night. But treachery was abound, because Robert Campbell had a missive come to him from the Earl of Argyll. And in that missive, he was told to kill every MacDonald in sight. Now remember, they're having table fellowship with one another. They invite him in for a meal. They're having a good time with one another. But when he read that, what was he to do? Tell the MacDonalds what was to happen? Not on your life. He kept it to himself. So they stayed the night. But in the morning, those soldiers attacked every woman and child. There were some, yes, who escaped but did not live because of the time of year it was in the highlands of Scotland. Treachery. That table fellowship was broken, but it's broken by treachery. The MacDonalds had invited them in. And how did they repay them? They killed them. In fact, Robert MacLean MacDonald, the head of the clan, was killed in his bed. He was going to go down and invite them for breakfast. But instead, they killed him. So you see, sometimes table fellowship has dire consequences. So that brings us back to the text. Because what Jesus does here in verses 22 through 25, he gives new meaning to the Passover. While they were eating, he took some bread. And after praying to Yahweh, he broke it. Now this is a round loaf, hard loaf of bread, unleavened, no leaven in it. So it's like a round loaf, and he would break it off. And he would pass it to them. And then what they would do is they would take that bread and they would dip it in that bitter dipping sauce before they ate it. Like, you know, like to kind of moisten it. So that's what he is doing here. And he gives it to them and he said, take it. This is my body. This represents my body. And when he had taken a cup, this would be the third cup. And when he had taken a cup and given thanks, blessing, he gave it to them, and they all drank from it. And he said to them, "This is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many. Truly I say to you, I will never again drink of the fruit of the vine until that day when I drink it new in the kingdom of God." So he breaks the bread after that third cup, and then on the fourth cup is what he says here. So he gives new meaning to the Passover. You see, Jesus knew that he was the ultimate Passover lamb. He knew he was the completion of Passover. He knew that it culminated in him. He's the Passover lamb slain for the deliverance of the people. That's why he says now what he does. That was unusual. No one had ever said anything like that before, but he does. This begins the last stage of the Passover meal. That's why it is the third and last cups of wine here that is most significant of all. I want us to turn for just a brief minute to Exodus chapter 6, because this is the scenario of what the patriarch, of what they would do during that meal. In Exodus chapter 6, verses 6 through the first part of 7, this is what we read. "Say therefore to the sons of Israel," this would be after the first cup of wine, "I am Yahweh, I am the Lord." And then they would sing part of the Hallel Psalms after the first cup. At the second cup, the patriarch would recite this: "And I will bring you out from under the burden of the Egyptians, and I will deliver you from their bondage." That would be the second cup. And then they would eat a little more. Remember, they ate the whole of the lamb. They would eat a little more than that and carry on. And then the third cup comes. At the third cup, see, this is what Jesus replaced. At the third cup, the patriarch would say this: "I will also redeem you with an outstretched arm and with great judgment." So after the third cup, after that is said, that is why Jesus said, "Take, eat, this is my body." This is the my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many. The reason why he said that is he is replacing what we read in Exodus chapter 6 here, with "I will also redeem you," with what he says there. And then the last thing he says, when he says, "Truly I say to you, I will never again drink of the fruit of the vine until that day when I drink it new in the kingdom of God," in the kingdom of Yahweh, that replaces what it says here in verse 7. "Then I will take you for my people, and I will be your God, and you shall know that I am the Lord your God." He replaced that with this, something they had never heard of before. Jesus uses the two elements of bread and wine to redefine them for what this last meal is all about. The significance of the bread and the wine. And then we see the conclusion of the meal, verses 26 to 31, and we'll be done for this morning. Notice what happens here. They're done. Judas has already left. Judas Iscariot is gone. They don't know why. But now it says, after singing a hymn, that would be part of the Hallel, they went to the Mount of Olives. They went out to journey to the Mount of Olives. And Jesus said to them, "You will all fall away because it is written." This comes from Zechariah. "I will strike down the shepherd and the sheep shall be scattered. But after I have been raised, I will go ahead of you to Galilee." But Peter said to him, "Though all may fall away, yet I will not." And Jesus said to him, "Truly I say to you that this very night, before a rooster crows twice, you yourself will deny me three times." But Peter kept saying insistently, "Even if I have to die with you, I will not deny you." And they were all saying the same thing also. So Jesus and the 11 leave. They make their way to Mount of Olives. He's on the way to Gethsemane. And Jesus tells them that they all will fall away or desert him. Now that's taken from Zechariah chapter 13, verse 7. But notice what he says there. Verse 28. "But after I have been raised, I will go ahead of you to Galilee." And here's boastful Peter. Peter speaks up and said, "Not me. I'm not going to fall away. I'm not going to deny you. I'm not going to fall away." And then the Lord tells me, you're going to deny me three times. And Peter again emphatically states that he will not do so, and the others join in. No way are we going to do that. Well, next week we're going to discover what occurs then. Do the 11 follow through with their promise? Time will tell. Well, what about us? Do we have table fellowship with Jesus? See, when we gather around the Lord's table every Lord's Day, that's what we're proclaiming. That we have table fellowship with Jesus. That we are identifying with Him. That we are one with Him. That we belong to Him. And brothers and sisters, you see, if we have table fellowship with Him, if we do, we need to pray every day that we may never break that table fellowship with Him. Because that's a dire thing, to break table fellowship with the Lord. To take oneself out from His boundaries, out from His love and care. Many people are doing that today. Many people have done it. Sad to say. And what's the Lord going to say about that? We know what the Scriptures say. "I never knew you." That's what it means to break that table of fellowship with Him. And we don't want to catch ourselves in that situation. That's what we had to think about through all our lives. Let's stand, we're going to sing, "For God so loved the world." That's what it's about.